Can you give me your first name? I don't have it.
My first name is Romeo, R-O-M-I-E.
Okay. This is an interview with Romy Moga for the Youngstown State University Westlake Terrace Oral History Project by Evelyn Mangi on October 15th, 1985 at 148 Lauderdale Avenue at 4:20 p.m. You'll be surprised how much you remember.
Go ahead.
Okay, start from the very beginning. Were you born in Youngstown?
No, I was born in Aurora, Illinois.
Okay, when did you come to Youngstown?
I came to Youngstown in 1937, spring of 1937.
Great, and what do you remember about it?
Well, I came to marry my wife, basically. I met her and I came to Youngstown to get married. We got married in October of 1937.
And she was a native of Youngstown?
Yes. Well, more or less, she graduated from East High in 1932.
Mm-hmm. What was Youngstown like then?
Well, more or less the good old days, they had trolley cars. The east end of Youngstown was really booming. The east end of town was primarily for the foreign element. Mm-hmm. And that is the Slovaks, Hungarians. And they had stores that you don't see today. They had livestock, poultry. You picked them out, you took them home, you fed them for a week or so, and then you butcher and make your soup or stews or whatever. And everything was more or less in barrels, in bulk, buying coffee and dried fruits and so on. And your meat markets were regular butchers with sawdust on the floor and the meat was hanging up. When I came here in 1937, that's just when the steel cheat and tube strike was on. That's when they had the riots down on Poland Avenue. See, that's when steel were just beginning to organize their union. And it was quite a commotion between labor and management back in 1937. Of course, I worked for Carnegie Steel and Gary Indiana before I came here in 1936, which was not unionized at the time.
It was not?
No, no. And when the war broke out, I worked for a finance company, which at that time was a white-collar job. And at the time, I was married and had three children, because we got married in 37. We had three children, the war broke out. And when I was called to go to either to get into defense work or go to the service. So I chose the General Fire Group. We were making aircraft during the war. That was 1940, I believe it was 1942 and 43. That's when I moved into the project. I moved into the project, I believe it was 1940, my memory serves me right, in 42, because I had my application early, and I was one of the first tenants to move in the project. Now, when that project opened up, Madison Avenue, going south, was a dividing line.
Of what?
Well, that was the dividing line for the whites lived north, and the colored families lived south.
Okay, unwritten law? Accepted by everybody?
Oh, yes. That's the way it is. They had it segregated at that time. Of course, they had it segregated in the Navy, too, when I went in 1944.
In the Navy?
Oh, yes. In boot camp, we were segregated.
Really?
Now, I moved in there, we moved in there rather, I think, in 1942. And we had one bedroom upstairs. They furnished heat. They furnished air, all the utilities. I think our rent started at $16 a month.
Forget
that included all the utilities, gas, electric, and heat.
How about telephone?
Well, telephone was optional. That is extra. You can pay for your own telephone.
Okay.
But then after a while, they went according to your income. See?
That's how they figured the rent?
Oh, yes. Of course, your income back in those days, $15 a week was a pretty fair paying job. Yeah. So we got a, I remember I got a raise working for a domestic finance corporation. And when I got a raise, why, I had reported, then they raised to $19 a month.
Oh.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Did you have a family by the time you moved in?
Oh, yes, yes. My last child was born in 1945. My first child was born, oldest boy, was born 1940. And then another boy was born 1943, and I had a daughter born in 45. And I mean, we moved out of there, out of the project in 1946, after the war. But as far as Youngstown, because so Youngstown was booming. There was a lot of mills here, a lot of activity. You could hear the steel mills operating around the clock. They worked three shifts there. You could see the smoke. You could see the blast furnace light up the whole city of Youngstown. You could see the glare of the steel mills and blast furnaces. The town was full of smoke. I would have to say we had the smoke, but we had a lot of people working there. And when I think back in 1937, when I came here, the population of Youngstown was 180,000.
That's a good sized town.
Yes. I understand it lost about 30,000-40,000.
Mm.
I don't know what the exact, I know that it lost quite a few taxpayers.
Yes, no. But in those days it was really going good?
Oh, yes, yes. Things with food was cheap. Well, naturally your income went down. Butter's 19 cents a pound. Bread was 8-10 cents a loaf. It was something to get ahead. I worked two jobs. I worked at General Fireproof. After the war, I got a job at Republic Rubber in the main office, in the sales department.
Oh.
And I worked at A&P as in the meat department. And I bought this house where I'm at now in 1945.
Is this where you came when you left the project? When you left?
Yes. I had this house rented for 1 year before we moved in, but we paid $6,200 for this house. At that time it was quite a, you know, payments were $15-$20 a month. I mean, things were really down. A dollar was worth a dollar, let's face it. But people worked hard. They had a lot of pride. As far as the generation concerned, it was quite different than it is now. In fact, my daughter's got two teenage girls. She's ready to pull her hair out. And my son, my oldest son's a doctor, dentistry. He's in San Diego. He's been there for 20-some years.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, he came out of Vietnam in 1965, and then he opened his practice in San Diego. So if there's anything particular you'd like to know, if you want to fire any questions, something that I haven't touched on.
Tell me about the projects. What were they like? The rooms, were they comfortable?
Oh, the project, they were absolutely comfortable, yes. They're brand new. You had steam heat, which is, you can't beat steam heat. They had facilities. They had their laundry room in one of the buildings, centralized.
Did you use it?
Oh, yes. We bought our own wash machine. They had laundry rooms where you could go down and wash your clothes. They had facilities you can hang them up in the wintertime.
Yeah. Oh, in the summertime, were you allowed to hang them outside?
Well, I'm pretty sure they had the facilities to hang them out in the summertime. They were very convenient, very economical, very convenient, and as far as this crime, we didn't have it. We could leave our doors unlocked all night. We didn't have to worry about crimes or things of that nature.
You had nice neighbors?
Very nice people, very friendly, very congenial. You knew your neighbors, and we helped each other out. I mean, It was a very, very nice time of raising family, I'd say. Very, very easy to raise a family.
Were they all families?
Oh, yes. Yes. Yes.
Everybody had children?
Yes, yes. Well, most, there was widows in there, and with daughters, or divorcees with children. We had a neighbor that had a child. She was divorced, and her income was such that she was entitled to live in the project. You know, it was based on income, whether you're a widow or retired or...
Was it hard to get into? I mean, was it considered
yes.
a real...
It was very difficult to get into. Like I said, I put my application way early to wait. I had to wait several months before I got in. And, yes, it was difficult to get in the project. People wanted to get in there real bad. I mean, it was something if you lived in that project.
Now, you came in 1937. Were you aware of it going up when it was under construction?
Yes, yes. See, when I came in 37, I seen they started construction there in 1939, I believe. And I knew what it was. And Mr. Paul Strait was the administrator or superintendent of the project,
mm-hmm.
elderly gentleman, very nice man. The main office right on the corner of Madison and Federal. That was their main office of the project. And you went down every month and paid your rent at the office.
Well, you had to go to the office for
your
rent? Oh,
yeah. You went every month to the office. We made our rental payments every month. And that was headquarters. And anything that went bad, I mean, if there's any maintenance, why, there was no problem. You just go down to the office and let them know what the problem was, and they'd take care of it. There was no problem.
They didn't give me any hard time?
No, no.
They had maintenance people who worked
right
there?
Oh, yes, they had maintenance people, sure.
They worked right there?
They worked right there. They had their own maintenance men.
Those are really well built.
They were well constructed, believe me. They were built to last. The floors were concrete, reinforced concrete, and the windows were metal, made of steel. And more, they were fireproof. There was just bricks, mortar, and steel. The only thing that could burn is your furniture, your
mm-hmm.
personal belongings.
And that was all your own personal?
Oh, yes.
Okay.
They were unfurnished, yes. You furnished your own furniture.
Did you see any of the construction when they were going up?
Yes, I watched the bricklayers, I watched the electricians, I watched the plumbers, I watched all the tradesmen. And it was quite a project. I didn't recall how many, how long. It took quite a while because there's quite a few buildings that went up at the time. I didn't keep track of it. I'd like to have kept a diary of how long it took.
I wish you had.
Yes. I didn't think it would be a historic project. I understand they moved some, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes, when they put in Madison Avenue.
When they put in Madison Avenue, they moved those big buildings. Mm-hmm. Something to move.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
They moved 11 of them, and you know they barely cracked the plaster.
I know.
That's how
I seen them move.
Oh, you watched them?
Oh, yes, I watched them move.
Can you tell me about that?
Well, it was unique the way they moved those buildings. They had a system that was just unbelievable on the way they jacked them up and put them on these dollies and just they rolled them over. I mean, just pulled them over. Yeah, it was quite a project.
Do you remember how long that took?
No, I don't recall the exact date, time element involved in that project, moving those buildings.
But it took a good...
Oh, it took quite a while, yes, ma'am. Yeah, that's quite a big project.
Do you remember reading things in the newspaper? Let's go back to when they were first building it.
Well, as I understand, I didn't get to see her. Mrs. Eleanor Roosevelt came to town. I knew she was in town.
Mm-hmm.
But at the time she was in town, I wasn't able to get to see her. I think she went downtown. They had a little reception for her. But she, as I understand, she came to Youngstown to more or less look the grounds over, I believe. Something had to do something with the project.
Mm-hmm.
If my memory serves me right. No. Did you hear anything?
They've got a picture of her coming
yes.
out of one of the...
It was in a paper. Uh-huh. It was in a Vindicator.
Yeah.
That she was in town.
Vindicator make a big splash?
Yes. In fact, he was in town, too, when he's campaigning.
Oh, he was?
Well, yes. He was in Youngstown when he's campaigning. Now, see, I voted for him if I recall correctly, the second term, 30, let's see, what year was it? I voted for him twice. He was elected three times, you know.
Yes.
Now, I could only vote for him twice because I don't think I was 21 years old.
The first time.
First time. Because I think he ran 1933, if I'm not mistaken.
I think you're right.
1932 or 33. Mm-hmm. At that time, I just come out of high school. But by 1937, I was 23 years old. I was old enough to vote for him, which I did. Mm-hmm. I voted for him the second term and the third term. I voted for him.
Is the feeling around the country, or at least the people you knew, for Roosevelt?
Oh, yes. I mean, for all the terms he ran as president of the United States, kids that were in high school don't remember any other president but FDR. Mm-hmm. Because he was it. That was it. In fact, when I came out of high school in 1932, he organized a CC, Civilian Conservation Corps, during the Depression. And the jobs just weren't available. People were actually starving. And I will tell you, some people were starving, eating out of garbage cans. Oh, yes, it was really tough. So I enlisted in CC, Civilian Conservation Corps.
Did you really?
Yes, ma'am. And it was we got three square meals a day. We got we got a dollar a day, $30 a month. $25 that money was sent to our parents. We kept $5 for spending money.
For the whole month?
Oh yes. But that money was to keep the family going at home.
Oh.
That was to support the family. That is, I had brothers and sisters at home. And that money went to my parents. I only got 5 months. It lasted.
Did you have a choice? I mean, did you have to send it back to your family?
Oh, yes. That was a must. That was mailed directly to the parents.
Oh,
we only got $5 out of $30 a month income.
Well, tell me about that. That's interesting. Where were you?
Well, I was stationed in... Well, first I went to Jefferson Barracks. That's Missouri, East St. Louis, Missouri. That was the old Army post down there. That was Army post of World War I. And they had World War I vehicles there. They were called Liberty Trucks. With canvas tops, with four or five people would sit in a cab.
In the cab?
In the cab.
Oh, wow.
That's how wide they were. They were used during World War I. They were hard rubber wheels, tires, no air pneumatic tires. They were hard rubber wheels.
Oh, wow.
And they were part of the chain driven. And it took two guys to crank that sucker to get it started. There's no starter in them.
For goodness sake.
And inasmuch as my dad had a grocery store, I knew how to drive a truck because we had a delivery truck during the Depression. And I took a driver's test for a company truck driver, and I got the job. And they issued us a brand new truck that then. It was a Chevrolet truck. And I was the company truck driver. I drive the lieutenant around. That was a boot camp in Jefferson Barracks. We were there for a few weeks. Then from there they shipped us to Sparta, Illinois, right along the shores of the Mississippi River.
Nice.
We had our camp there before they built the barracks. We were out in tents. And we could see the Mississippi riverboat going down the river.
The big paddle boats?
The paddle boats.
Oh, right. Wow.
And it was something to see at night with the lights lit, and you could hear the music, and they were dancing aboard the boat, the riverboat. So I did have my wish. I saved enough money. We had weekends off, Saturday and Sunday, and a bunch of us fellows from camp, from our company, went aboard that ship.
Oh.
And we had a ball.
I bet.
We danced on the deck and the moonlight. It was really something.
They had a band?
Oh, yeah, live band. Big band area. That's when they had the big band area back in the 30s.
Oh, okay.
Oh, yes.
Was there any big names playing on the boat? Or?
I don't recall the big name bands, but I do know that I danced in many a big one in Chicago because my hometown was only 38 miles from Chicago.
Oh.
And that was my stamping ground. That's when I dated my wife and took her to the Trianon in Chicago.
The Trianon?
The Trianon. They had the Blackhawk, the Trianon, the Aragon. Wayne King was a steady big band at the Aragon, yes.
Wow. Those are ballrooms.
Oh, those are all famous ballrooms, yes. Black Hawk there, the Tina, and Tommy Dorsey's there, and all those. Clyde McCoy, Jen Garber, all those old time band leaders. That was a hub of the United States, Chicago, for big time era. I mean, that's where they all had their base, the camp, more or less. Mm. And yes, that was really roaring. And that was during the Al Capone era too. Oh yes.
And that was he was
working hot and heavy then.
Tell me what you.
Oh yes, Al Capone. I remember when they had that shooting. They called famous.
Valentine's Day.
Valentine's. Yeah. Yes.
You remember that?
Oh yes, yeah.
Where were you?
Well, I was 30 miles from Chicago at the time. But we were so close that everything was, our local newspaper carried. Yeah, he was quite a man, Al Capone.
What was the feeling about him?
Well, he was notorious, but he didn't harm poor, he helped poor people. He was very, very generous with his money when it comes to feeding and helping the poor. He didn't bother the poor people, he just had control of the prohibition. And he was running whiskey out of Canada, and when it was illegal to sell whiskey or beer. But then back in them days, before prohibition, even my folks made homemade beer, homebrew. People made their own beer, and he made their own homemade whiskey. It was illegal, but hey, how are you going to stop it? So FDR had come to the conclusion you couldn't stop it, so he made it legal. Prohibition. That's when the President of the United States passed a law that it was permissible to buy your whiskey in stores and your beer. But yes, I remember quite a bit. Not only that, but Dillinger was quite famous at the time.
Frank Dillinger?
Yes.
Was he in Chicago too?
Yes.
Oh, wow.
And he happened to date a lady who happened to be related to my wife's girlfriend.
Oh, for Christ.
And she lived in Elwood City.
Pennsylvania.
Yes. And she was a lady in red.
That was the lady?
That was the lady in red, right. That was my wife's girlfriend's aunt.
Oh, for goodness sake. Oh, do you remember her name?
Her name was, I can't recall offhand. I can't recall. My memory doesn't just serve me right. Eventually I'll think of it. But she was Romanian, and she was deported, you know.
Oh no, I didn't.
Oh yes.
After this.
After she turned Dillinger in, she put the thing on Dillinger. When the FBI, and then when they come out of the movie, in Chicago, they shot him. They killed him. But inasmuch as he was involved in the big time gangsters racketeering, her life was at stake. So the federal government gave her money to leave the country.
Oh, for goodness sake.
Oh, yes. They paid all over. They paid her way to Romania. Because her life wasn't too safe in this country.
Has anybody ever heard from her since?
No, she went to Romania and retired.
Just disappeared?
Just disappeared. Oh, changed her name. The federal government worked with her to get her out of the country before she was shot. Because they were going after her.
Yeah.
His gang.
What was the feeling about her? Were the people glad that she turned him in, or?
Well, in a way, you had pros and cons, you know, that she did put the thing on Dillinger.
And some people thought she shouldn't have done it?
Well, some people thought it was, you know, it wasn't the right thing to do, and other people thought it was. She turned him in. That was back in the 30s also.
Chicago's pretty far from here. What was your wife and what were they doing in Chicago?
Who?
You said you met your wife in Chicago.
I met my wife in Warren, Ohio.
What were you doing in Warren?
Well, my uncle happened to be, he had a barbershop in Warren. I came out to visit with him in 1933. And I went to a dance on a Saturday evening and I met her. And we corresponded for 4 years, back and forth. Of course, she stayed in Youngstown. I went back to Illinois, to Aurora, We corresponded, and in 1937, we decided to get married. So I came here and got married. I've been here ever since. It's 48 years, 47, 48 years, haven't you?
Yeah, almost.
I was 23 years old when I came here.
Okay, and that's almost as old as the project. You moved here just about...
Yes, the project started 2 years after I moved, I stayed here, yes.
Mm-hmm. Now that had to be a big building project.
Very big. It was something to watch, something to see being constructed.
Did they play it up big in the newspapers?
Oh, yes, it was.
Show the progress?
The progress, how they're progressing, and it was something really to watch. And it was a pleasure to live in those projects. Believe me, I mean, they were clean, neat, new, comfortable, warm, mm-hmm. and reasonable. Mm-hmm. $16 a month, you know, to start with, wasn't too bad.
Nice neighbors?
Very nice people, very nice neighbors, yes. Like I said, the dividing line was Madison Avenue, but we had no problem with the racial problem, because even back in the 30s, we had no racial problems. Even when I went to high school, we had colored. But we never had that feeling. I had very good colored friends, very, very nice people.
Mm, and there was no...
No way, no.
Well, how about at Westlake? Was there an exchange of visits and friendliness and...
Well, people just roamed around freely. I mean, there was no limitation of where you could go, who you could talk to, you can associate with who you want to. But like I said, the dividing line was south of Madison Avenue.
Well, who decided that?
Basically, I don't really know how that came about. I never did look into it. But there was no animosity. There was no dissension, in as much as half of the project was colored and the other half was white. But we had no problem.
Do you remember the number of the unit that you lived in?
151.
151?
1 Street, right on the corner.
Mm-hmm.
Last building. It was the last building. In fact, I had my choice.
Oh, really?
Oh, yes. I had my pick of the apartment.
Because you were one of the first?
One of the first, right.
How many people moved in when you... Do you remember the day that you moved in? What day was it?
We moved in there. It was in the spring of 1942, if I'm not mistaken. Spring of 42.
Okay, well, they were completed probably in 40.
Yes. 40, yes. 40 they were completed, yes.
So then they weren't fully filled?
No, because they were screened people. People being screened.
Oh, they...
Oh, yes, you had the qualifications. Your income was one factor. And, yes, I had my choice. For some reason, I don't know why.
How many different kinds of apartments? You had a one bedroom?
They had, they had one bedroom, two bedroom, three bedrooms. Depends on the size of the family.
Was the price different?
Very small. Only a couple of dollars a month. There wasn't that much difference. But there was a difference in the two bedroom, three bedroom apartments.
I read about the landscaping, and I've been up there, and they have those playgrounds. Were your children old enough to take part in the...
Well, they had a centralized paved area where kids could play. They had basketball nets, hoops. And, yes, my oldest son played there. He played on the playground there. You're talking about the project playgrounds?
Mm-hmm.
Yes, they had playgrounds. Of course, they were scattered in different areas. So many, they had one playground for so many buildings.
Mm-hmm.
That's the way they were assigned.
But the kids just...
Yes. And they had a playground. They used to play there and sprinkling hose and water and so on.
How about the community building? Did you use that at all?
They had a community building there right on Lexington Avenue, right in the center of the project there, between Griffith and Worth Street. There was a community center, yes.
Did you use that?
We used it, yes. We used it.
How? Tell me about it.
Well, I wasn't so much active in the community center, my wife was, because I was active in Red Cross during the war, first aid, and we had air raid shelters. We were being trained for first aid, Red Cross, and then we had air raid shelters. We had the air raid sirens, drills. And the project had air raid shelters, but I don't recall just where they were at, but we had signs, buildings where air raid shelters were posted. If I'm not mistaken, I think one of the community center buildings was one of the air raid shelters.
Oh, really? They?
Yes. Mm-hmm. But periodically, they blow these air raid sirens. They still do. They still have them here. If you ever hear my Saturdays, 6 o'clock, the sirens.
Okay. I just thought that was a 6 o'clock.
No, that's the air raid shelter. They used to, they would go off in different sections of town. You've got one here on Madison Avenue, fire station. There's one there. They're on the south side, north side, east side shelter. But people were cautioned about air raid shelters. And we were training in Red Cross. We had that down at YMCA.
The training?
Training, yes. Mm-hmm. Red Cross training, yes. Mm-hmm.
And were you a... an air raid.
Yes, that certain section of I was involved in air raid and Red Cross.
Okay, what were your duties?
Well, my duties was to, in case of a real thing, we had to work on people on artificial respiration. So
much. Oh, okay.
Yeah, and how to get first aid, how to put tourniquets on.
Uh huh. First aid.
First aid.
Okay.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Splints and uh-huh. Tourniquets and so on. It's important. Respiratory.
Okay. And the shelter would have been inside the settlement house?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay. What other kind of things went on in there?
Well, let's see. I don't. Did it be anything in particular? Did it? Well, just normal, the routine daily living. People would go to work and come home, and that was their home.
Where'd you do your shopping?
Our shopping was done, we had a store up on Belmont Avenue, had A&P, it had Kroger's.
How did you get around?
Acme stores.
Acme?
Yeah, they had Acme stores.
Is that like a supermarket?
Yeah, it was local supermarket, locally owned. Actually, how did I get around? I had a car, I had a 1937 Chevrolet.
Did you have a car?
Yes, mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah, I got around. Of course, gasoline was only 16 cents a gallon.
Mm-hmm.
But during the war, when the war broke out, I was working at Republic Rubber at the time, and the gasoline was rationed.
Oh.
So inasmuch as I had riders with me, the government gave me A, B, and C stamps, which would give me more gas, because I was taking the people to work in my car, which was conserving transportation.
Oh, yes. So they gave you extra.
Instead of four people driving the car, one person drive the car, and he was allowed more gas to go back and forth to work.
And it was always you? You didn't take turns driving?
No, it was just me.
The others didn't have cars? Or?
They had cars, but they only had A stamp. Would give them only maybe 2 or 3 gallons a week.
Oh, I see.
They were limited. It was rationed. Gasoline was rationed, just like coffee and sugar and butter. Everything's rationed. In fact, I have the rationing books here.
I still have
rationing. Yes, I still have the rationing book. Each family is allowed one book per person. That's his husband, wife, and their children. And I've got three rationing books for my children, one for myself and my wife. And they have coupons for sugar, for butter. You're allowed so much. And you had to present that coupon book to the cashier when you go through the cashier booth. Yeah.
Was it enough?
It was ample, yes. You had to budget. You had to live, eat within what they allowed you.
Yeah.
They allowed you more, I mean, but you just made it do. Sugar and butter and so. Yeah. Let's see, what else can I touch you?
Well, what were the feelings about rationing? Were people willing to go along with it?
Oh, yes. We made sacrifices. It didn't take us long to get in the groove. It didn't take us long to convert to wartime production. That's when Rosie the Riveter got her name back in World War II.
Did she know anybody that?
Yes, and when I went to I went to General Fireproof. After I had this job at Domestic Finance Corporation, my draft broker called me and said, "You'll have to get out of that job and get into essential work, wartime work." So I quit the job and I went to General Fireproof. And we were making aircraft. And we were making the P-63s, no, Bell Air Cobras out of Buffalo, New York, but we were making the fuselage here in Youngstown. And we shipped the fuselage and the wings to Buffalo and they assembled it in Buffalo. And those planes all went to Russia.
You mean we gave them?
Oh, yes. Lend-lease, oh, yes.
Oh, for goodness sake.
Russia got all those planes.
Was there any bad feelings about what you were making going to Russia with them?
No, because they were, after Hitler invaded Russia, naturally they were our allies. Because we were fighting the Germans, and naturally the Russians were fighting the Germans. So by helping the Russians, we were helping ourselves. By the same token.
Okay, so you still had the patriotic feeling?
Oh, yes, yes. But when I started in General Fireproof, there's quite a few women in slacks.
Oh, you weren't used to seeing women in slacks?
Well, no, that's when the trend started.
Okay.
Because they worked like men, side by side. They'd done welding, they'd done basically just about anything a man would do, your training.
What was the feeling toward them?
Toward the women?
Yeah, the women workers. Did you have a tendency to think she was cute, or did you respect what she was doing?
Well, I respect what she was doing, but when I first, I had a woman on my project, I was in charge of the project, getting three and a half fuselages in 8-hour shift. But we worked 10 hours a day, 7 days a week, 70 hours a week.
Wow.
Three shifts, around, they call it swing shift, round the clock.
And they worked right along with you?
Oh, yes. We worked 70 hours a week, 10 hours a day.
That's a lot.
Yes. But she was there before I got on this particular job. And she was my helper. Because we were riveting what's called lumen skins to the fuselage. And she had to be inside bucking the rivets while I was underneath with an air hammer riveting.
Mm-hmm.
So, One time she took her bucking bar off the rivet, and when you do that, you have nothing to hold that air hammer from going through the skin. And it ruined the job. So the FBI was in on me, yeah, and they thought I sabotaged the ship.
Oh, really?
I was called in, definitely called in. They thought I sabotaged it. No, I didn't sabotage it.
Did they talk to her, too?
Well, they talked to her, sure. But they had inspectors, the FBI was in there, because this is wartime production.
Mm-hmm.
And anything that didn't look right away they classified as sabotage. Then you were on the carpet, want to know why, and so on and so forth. But she was getting $1 an hour, and I was getting 75 cents an hour. That's the only thing I didn't like about it.
Why was she getting paid?
Because she was there. She was there a few weeks longer. You
seniority,
follow?
Yeah.
You start out at 75 cents an hour, and after so many weeks, they promoted it to $1 an hour.
Okay.
And there was no union shop there. Eventually, I told my superintendent it wasn't fair, but eventually I got it to $1 an hour.
Okay, well, did she continue to work after the war?
That I do not know, because I left, I went to Navy then.
Oh.
I was called. Oh. Uncle Sam sent me readings.
Even though you had
Even though I had three children.
And the defense job?
And defense job didn't stop me. I was 31 years old at the time with three children.
And they still took you?
Yes.
Wow, what were your feelings about that?
Well, I was called, and I had, what are you going to do? You're going to do your duty as a patriotic duty. There you go. You serve. But I didn't feel too bad because I met men that are a lot older than me with bigger families.
Mm.
So they just wanted to fill their quota, these draft boards, and they didn't care whether you, as long as you had a little more heat in your body, you're able to body man, they just take in.
And where did you get sent?
I went to the Great Lakes after that. I went to Cleveland, the old post office, that's where the induction center was. And from there we went to Great Lakes and moved camp, 6 weeks. 6 weeks of boot camp.
Was that hard?
You know, I shouldn't say this, but being that we're talking about the segregation, you know we're segregated in boot camp also?
Boot camp?
Oh, yes. One side of the road was white, the other side was covered with sailors.
The road was the dividing?
The road was the dividing. There's Great Lakes training station.
Were you allowed to mix after hours?
No, we didn't mix.
So.
No, we didn't get to see each other. You didn't board ship, but there was still that segregation feeling back in the 30s and 40s.
Were you segregated on board ship?
No. Well, yeah, they had their own quarters, yes.
Oh, they really did?
Yeah, they had quarters.
Mm-hmm. But close enough so that you were...
Yes, we could associate. Mm-hmm.
Okay. What were the feelings then?
We didn't have that feeling. I never thought of it that way. Because I come from the old school. My parents came from Europe. In the early 1900s, back in 1908, if I'm not mistaken. That's when they start migrating to the United States during the century, back in the early 1900s. That's when you had this Ellis Island, when they used to embark.
Mm-hmm. Ellis Island.
Mm-hmm. That's when people came from all parts of Europe, Poland, Yugoslavia, Hungary, Romania. I'm Romanian descent. My parents were born and raised in Romania. And, of course, I was born in this country. But that's when they started coming to America. Hard-working people.
Mm-hmm.
They were the backbones of this country.
Mm-hmm.
The Polish people, the Yugoslav, Hungarians, Romanians. They couldn't read or write, but they had a strong back, and they were glad just to be an American, just to be in this country.
Willing to work?
Oh, yes. I worked for a lot of them. When I worked in Gary, Indiana in 1930, let's see what year was, 1935, I worked for Carnegie Steel in Gary, Indiana. And there was no union shop. You worked wherever they put you. I bought a job for $50. That's the way I got a job. I had connections with the superintendent of one of the shops there in Carnegie Steel. Yeah.
You had to give somebody $50?
Yes.
Was that a common thing?
Yes.
That's a lot of money.
Yes, I borrowed $50 and get a job. And I was glad to get it, too. Yes?
Well, in the early 30s, jobs were hard to come by.
They were very precious. Very precious. You got a job, you cherish it. You had something when you had a job. You had an income. And you did anything, just to... People had pride.
Mm.
There was no such thing as food stamps and stuff.
Mm-hmm. No welfare.
Mm-hmm. No welfare. Uh-huh. I can remember going to high school in the 30s when my stomach was so empty, it would growl in class. I was so embarrassed for lack of food. It's hard to digest, but it's true.
Yeah. Let me turn this over. And you remember all those?
Well, sure. I was my teens, the prime of my life.
Did your father always have a job, or was he...
My dad had a grocery store, independent grocery store. And when the Depression hit, he had all his investment in a bank. That's when the banks closed, if you remember.
Yeah.
1930, somewhere along there. Mm-hmm. People lost homes, their whole life savings. And a lot of people committed suicide.
I really
jumped out of the window. Well, whatever my parents had, they lost every penny.
In the store?
In the store, everything. And you had the corner grocery store, the independent stores, And people come in and buy, and they would charge their groceries.
Mm.
And every month they'd pay their bill. And many times they come and borrow a dollar or two to buy coal or to pay the gas or electric.
Oh, pretty
that was a central place right there. My dad would loan them money to pay for the gas or the electric. And well, we didn't have electric. We had kerosene lanterns.
Oh, really?
And gas mantles. Yes. Yes. Before electricity, we had kerosene lanterns. And my job was to fill them up when that kid.
All the lamps?
And we had outhouses. I'm not trying to pull no punches. We didn't have the conveniences.
Yeah.
We had water, waters outside with a pump.
Mm.
We didn't have running water. We didn't have no inside commodes.
Wintertime must have been tough.
It was tough. Yes, we had potbelly stoves.
Glad to get back in.
Yes.
From the outhouse real fast.
One big stove in the kitchen would heat the whole house. You'd bake, cook, everything, wood or coal.
Oh, for goodness sake.
You'd stand around there and keep warm.
And your mother did that?
Yes, ma'am. She baked her clothes and their own bread. And we used to get flour in 50-pound bags, and Mom would take the flour and bleach them and make pillowcases.
Mm.
Out of flour bags.
Did you have a large family?
Six children, yes.
Mm.
In fact, most of the people had big families, 8, 10, 12 children. Was nothing. That was common back in the Depression, big families. Because people raise children for an asset, not a detriment. More children, the richer you were because you had more hard help. Even the farmers.
Mm-hmm.
They raised children to help with the farm. They were an asset, not a detriment.
Mm-hmm.
And even when I started to work, after I came out of high school, I brought my paycheck, I gave it to my mother. She gave me spending money. Yes. And I was dating then at the time. I was an adult, 19, 20 years old, but I gave her my whole paycheck. Thought nothing of it. She gave me my spending money.
What would a date have been like?
A what?
A date. What would you?
I'll tell you. A date was a date nowadays, believe me. Girls were ladies. 100%. They wore long gowns, they wore their high heel pumps, immaculate. They treated them like ladies, but they acted like ladies. And the first date I had with my wife was 1936. We went to Chicago. She had a long gown. And the music was beautiful. They turned the lights dim, you had the big bands, slow music. And it was, you held your date. It was none.
Yeah.
And, oh, yes. It was thrilling, believe me. It was something that you can't forget.
Well, what did you do? You picked her up? Did you have a car?
Oh, yes. Well, no, I didn't have a car. I borrowed my dad's car.
Oh,
he
yeah.
loaned it to me, yes. And I drove to Chicago by my date, you know. And then we stopped at, we had, back in them days, soda pumps were very, very prominent. That's where young folks would gather in the soda fountains. In fact, Youngstown had one. Petrarca's was famous back in the 30s.
Oh, really? Where was that?
Oh, that was up West Federal Street.
West Federal?
West Federal Street, right I think it was on Phelps Street. Phelps and Federal. That was a hot spot for the teenagers. You go in there after dance, you have a sandwich, you have a soda, and that's where you spent your extra hour before you took your date home.
I would imagine you stayed out till 2 o'clock in the morning.
No, because she had to be in a certain hour. That was it. I remember when I used to date my two sisters, they had to be in at 12 midnight.
Mm-hmm.
That was it. The boys could stay out till 1. And the girls didn't like it, but that's the way it was. Boys get away with it.
Yeah.
But the girls had to be in a certain time. You'd bring them in, you'd bring them home. That's it.
And you wore a suit and a tie?
Oh, definitely. Suit and a tie, the best. Yeah.
No blue jeans?
No. The only blue jeans I've seen is on the farm. Farmers wore them, but we never wore blue jeans.
Not even in casual
afternoons
after school? Or?
Mm-hmm. No. In fact, I can remember the first pair of long pants I wore.
Oh, yeah.
Because when I was a youngster, say 7, 8, 9, 10 years old, we had knickers. High socks to the knees, and they had an elastic band around. They would call them knickers.
Right.
And you weren't allowed to wear long pants until you were a certain age, 18, 19, 20 years old back. Oh, yes.
Oh, that?
Yes.
Wow.
They had a, yeah. But then that really disappeared, and finally the younger boys were able to wear long pants, slacks. But we didn't wear no, we weren't allowed to wear jeans. And we had a dress code. We went to grammar school also.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yes. You were dressed like a gentleman. No, you didn't go in there like a... Mm-hmm. You had a room in your...
Did you go to public school?
Public school. Like a red schoolhouse.
Oh, really?
Oh, yes.
In Illinois?
I used to ring the bell.
Oh, did you?
The hand bell. And we had one big building that, I think it was three classes in that one big building, with a big coal furnace to heat the whole building.
Mm-hmm. More than one room?
Yes. No, one big room.
Oh, one big room?
One big room. Then we had two smaller houses on the side of the big building that for different grades.
Oh.
And then you have boys' outhouses and girls' outhouses. And potbelly stoves.
One teacher?
Yes. She taught several classes at one teacher.
What'd she do? Give you an assignment and then go to
Yes.
It?
Uh-huh. Plenty of homework, too. And I had one teacher, I think it was sixth grade, she taught two generations, my aunt also. She was most of the teachers are older women. They dressed that way too, more or less. But this Mrs. Epstein, she was, oh God, she was about 70 years old then.
Oh.
And she had my aunt, and she graduated from high school. She was much older than I. She had my aunt, my sister, my brother, myself.
What did they dress like?
They had long skirts.
All the way to the...
Oh, yes, they had long skirts down to the ankles. That was their dress code. And not only teachers, but even the teenage girls wore long dresses, long skirts. They shortened the hemline as time went on.
Yeah.
You got into the 30s, they start shortening the hemlines.
Yeah. Okay, well, before we wrap it all up,
right.
I'd like to hear some more about the CCC camp.
Oh, the CCC camp?
Yeah.
Well, the CCC camp was strictly Army life. I didn't realize until I got there. They issued us World War I clothing.
Oh, leftover from the?
Leftover from the war.
Oh, for goodness sakes.
And they were World War I trousers and leggings that you had to lace on.
Oh, on the side?
They come up to here, they were cloth leggings.
Yeah.
And regular army garments, clothes. And we had, reveille.
What time?
5:30 in the morning.
Ooh.
Yes. And they blow taps at 6 o'clock. That was strictly army life, exactly, same as army life. And what we were in there for is to, we worked on earth erosion.
Uh-huh.
And out Midwest, not on the West Coast, they worked on these forests. They made what they call forest paths for fire.
Oh, okay.
It depends where you were stationed.
Did you have a choice?
No, I didn't have much choice, no. They just sent me to Sparta, Illinois. That's way the southern part of Illinois, right along the Mississippi River. Some of my friends went to California, some went to Denver, they shipped all over the country.
Oh, it didn't matter where you were from? You just
they make a difference where you're from. Just depends where they want to send you. But it was construction work. It was pick and shovel.
Oh.
Oh, yes.
Okay. Good hard work?
Oh, definitely hard work, yes.
Well, then you had a really good job.
We planted trees, and like I said, they built these fire paths for out west where they had a lot of these forest fires. And down south, Aurora, Illinois, they had what's called earth erosion. Water, rain would wash the earth away. we had to condition the soil for preservation of the soil.
How'd you do that?
Well, I didn't work on the project. I was a company truck driver.
Yeah, that sounds like a really good job.
It was. That was a picnic because I had to chauffeur the lieutenant around.
Yeah.
And I was mostly in camp. And I would deliver the chow with the company truck. I'd take it out to the field. We had these big 5 gallon cans of food. And I'd appoint different workers to serve the food.
And you called him lieutenant. Did everybody have rank?
Oh, yeah. No, just lieutenant.
Oh.
No, the rest were just laborers, you might say.
Okay, then you didn't move.
We didn't have no rank, no.
Okay. You couldn't be the lieutenant ever?
No. The lieutenant, he was in charge of the company. But there's no sergeant or second lieutenant, third lieutenant, anything. You were in there, you had the blue jeans. Yes, you did have blue jeans there.
Oh, okay.
We had blue jean hats. Everything blue jeans. Yes. Of course, you had your own civilian clothes, and we had Saturday and Sunday, you were able to go to town, and we put on our civilian clothes. But it was tricky army life.
What did the workers do to stop erosion? What were they doing?
They were digging some kind of transplanting trees.
Oh, okay.
Implanting trees, what they were doing. Different areas where, as long as you had foliage, grass, or trees, that would stop the water washing the dirt down.
Okay.
So that would keep the dirt from being washed down when you had those torrential rains. You had those foliage, grass, and trees.
And how long were you in?
I was in there about a year and a half.
Was there a designated amount of time you could stay in?
I think you could. I think the time element was there about 6 months, and you can ask for discharge. But you can be enlisted for another 6 months.
And you did?
Yes, I did. Because we got free food. We had a place to sleep and we had food. That was our main goal: some place to sleep and some hot food.
Okay, so you really didn't need more than $5.
No, $5, because you go wherever you went, everything was cheap there. You wanted a nickel, you go to the movies, it cost you 5 cents. A bag of popcorn is 5 cents.
Mm. Well, if you were planting trees, what were they doing? What did they do in the wintertime?
That's not, you know something? I never thought of that. You got me guessing out too in the wintertime. Really, I can't remember what we did in the wintertime. Isn't that something?
Drove the truck, though?
Yes, I drove the truck. I used to drive the truck from Sparta, Illinois to East St. Louis, Missouri to pick up the groceries, and, you know, cans and boxes of groceries, cans and goods. But I don't recall actually what we did in the wintertime. Isn't that something? I feel stupid.
Do you remember driving the truck out, taking the
taking the food out, but I... Vaguely, I remember winter months.
Maybe there wasn't a lot of snow along the Mississippi.
Well, it was pretty cold. We had some cold weather. Because I used to hitchhike from, that was about 400 some miles from Sparta to my hometown.
Oh.
I hitchhiked, and I got to ride on a cattle wagon truck. Because that's the only source of transportation, you hitchhike.
But nobody was afraid to do it then?
No. No, in fact, this is quite common back then. A lot of younger men used to hop these freight trains and go out to the West Coast. Oh, yes. To find a new...
Looking for work?
Well, yeah, looking for work. That's when they had these hobos, you know, just traveling around the country.
Yeah. Can gangers.
Yes. Used to hop these freights. Get to the West Coast or wherever they wanted to go.
Did you ever hear of anybody getting hurt hitchhiking?
No, because times were altogether different than they are now. People were hard up, and whoever picked up a hitchhiker knew that he was hard up. Mm-hmm. We had compassion for each other. They knew we were all in the same boat. And I can remember I come home from a dance 1 o'clock in the morning. In summertime, the screen door was open. The doors weren't locked. You didn't have to have a key to get in. Because the doors were left open for you to come home. that's the way things were back in those days.
Too bad.
They had discipline. We respected the law. Not only the law, we respected the teacher, our teacher. We did not get away with stuff like that. We step out of line. They use the yardstick. They paddle you. They put you in a corner. And if it got too bad, you were expelled. Your parents knew about it. Every time you stepped out of line, you got it, and your parents, you go home, and your parents give it to you. So you get them both ends. In fact, there was no smoking in the school. They didn't smell smoke on your clothes, you're expelled.
Oh, really?
Oh, yes. There was not a smoke.
How about, like in the CC camp, were there many people who smoked there?
Very few people smoked back in them days. Oh. Very few people smoked. We had a few. Yeah, when I started to smoke I was about 20, 21 years old and I started to smoke. But we rolled Bull Durham's hands and smoke, 5 cents. We couldn't afford a ready-made cigarette. They were 10 cents a pack. So then they had a machine that you'd buy, you'd roll your own, make your own cigarettes.
Oh, you buy tobacco?
You buy tobacco, 5 cents a package, and you get papers, and you get quite a few cigarettes. My wife and I used to roll. She cut with the scissors. It's considerable.
Were they any good?
Yes, yes. Yeah, they were good. Better than rolling Bull Durham. Those are 5 cents a bag. You come in a cloth bag.
Okay, what was that called?
Bull Durham. Bull Durham.
Oh, for you.
Yes.
And there she did.
Mm-hmm. Well, you've probably seen that West commercial where they used to pull a string.
Yeah.
Roll with one hand.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's called Bull Durham. Then they come out with Targ and Bugler, which is a longer strand of tobacco. It's easier to roll.
Oh.
And they were 5 cents a pack. You make quite a few of them with a machine. You put the tobacco in there and put the paper in there, and you still got the machine.
Oh, for goodness.
Oh, yeah. I still have
that's
it.
That's an antique.
Uh-huh.
Well, looking back, your experiences at CC camp were good?
Good. Very good experience. And very, very, very good. I enjoyed every minute I was in the CC camp. Yes. Made a lot of friends. You were there for one reason, do your job. You know you had a paycheck, you know it was only $5 a month, and you know your parents are getting $25 to help feed them, keep the home going. And discipline was good. And there was no rioting, none of that stuff going. But it didn't enter our minds to step out of line as far as rioting and hold up and robbery and stuff like that. There was no such thing.
Okay, well, your experiences then at Westlake were also good experiences.
Very good experience. Very good. There were hard times, believe me. And when I came to Youngstown in 1937, it was still the extension of Depression. Mm-hmm. And the only thing that pulled us out of Depression, I can safely say, unequivocally, is a World War II.
True.
That's what brought our economy back, because our plants were humming. People were working 8, 10, 12 hours a day.
You didn't have to buy a job then?
No way. They're begging for help.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Okay. You mentioned that strike too beforehand.
That was 1937.
Well,
they had a riot down there in Poland Avenue. They had one in Detroit, Michigan with the car automotive back in the 30s. Also, they had sit-ins.
Well, then did the unions get a hold? Did you have union shop when you were working for the defense?
No. No, when I worked for defense, they were just starting to organize. They were passing pamphlets on the use on the car parking lots. They're trying to just start to organize, get members to sign up. And it was a battle. I mean, before you got enough signatures and enough power to stand up to management.
People weren't interested in belonging to a union?
Oh, yes, they were. Sure, they were interested. But because management they took advantage of labor. They can do anything you want, and cheap labor. Mm-hmm. And There was no such thing as you're not allowed to do this job. You work wherever they put you, whether it's carpenter work or whether it's digging or. It has a good. Yes, union did do a lot for the American working people, but sometimes I think that now I think they're going too far.
Hmm. Yeah.
No, they have the good points and bad points. They got them too powerful.
Yeah.
In a way.
You're right.
They're going overboard, I think.
Yeah. Sad, but true.
It's true, isn't it?
Yeah, I'm afraid so. Okay. So, well. Is there anything about your life that you wished would have gone differently?
No. Nothing. I only regret I can't live it over.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm. Okay. True. True. Okay. It was a peaceful and enjoyable experience. People enjoyed life. And I lost my wife 10 years ago. She died of breast cancer.
Mm.
We'd been married 50 years in 1987, 48 years. In fact, we got married on Halloween.
Oh, really?
It's our anniversary.
Oh.
But, like my daughter said, Dad, you're one woman man. I said, you're damn right. Here's my expression. I married for love, that's the way it was. For better, for worse, for sickness. We held those vows. We stuck to those vows. We both come up the hard way, hard knocks. She come from a poor family, I came from a poor family. And we worked together, we struggled together. We cried together, we worked, I mean, that's the way it was. If I had to do it, the only thing I regret is not to, these young generation of today don't realize what they've got. Everything's too easy and too soft. Now my three children went to Rain. They all graduated from Rain School here. My oldest boy graduated in 1958. Went to Ohio State. He was on Dean's List for 4 years.
Wow.
He's a doctor of dentistry. Then he enlisted. He was a commissioned officer. He went to Vietnam as a doctor of dentistry in the Navy. But all my three children. They were teenagers during the 60s, 50s, mm-hmm. 60s. Yeah, 60s. Mm-hmm. Those were beautiful years. I enjoyed those years.
They didn't give you a hard time?
No. Uh-uh.
Nobody wanted to go to Woodstock?
No. It was a nice generation, the 60s, when Elvis Presley was popular. That was, they had their jukebox and they had their fling. It was a peaceful, it was not a rowdy. Generation, I would say.
Even
like my son, doctor, he's 44 years of age, he's 45. He said, Dad, I'm glad I was raised during the generation when I went to school. Because there's no such thing as cocaine and marijuana. Somebody, even in Ohio State on the campus, he went down there to visit. He said, oh gosh, he said, I'm glad I got out of there when I did. Things has changed.
Yeah.
And even my children have respect for older people. We had respect, that was upon our heads. You respect your mother, your elders, you respect law, you respect your teacher, you respect, you had to have it. And that's the only way to get this country back on our feet.
Mm-hmm.
Put some fear and respect. These kids don't have respect. Teachers don't. They touch a child, they're sued. I don't get it, you know.
Yeah, I don't either. That's
a friend of mine had a granddaughter, went to school right here in one of the schools on the south side. And she was home one day from school. I said, what do you do? How come you're not in school? She said, we're on a strike. I said, for what? She said, well, they won't allow us to smoke in school.
Oh,
they're striking to smoke in school.
Okay, well, how about, is there anything you'd like to add? Have we missed anything?
There's a lot. I mean, there's so much.
Oh, I'm sure you could talk for 2 days.
Oh, yeah, there's no end. No, there's no end. We We had our ups and downs. Our country went through something. And we never complained. Let's face it, you didn't have food, you didn't eat. And not many times I was school hungry, I'm not kidding you. And kids didn't have shoes, holes in their shoes. A lot of kids couldn't go to school, they didn't have clothes to go to school. And of course I have two younger brothers. My mother raised two families, 15 years apart.
Uh-huh.
There's 10 years and 15 years difference between my youngest brothers. When I came from high school, I used to go across town and buy bread in a laundry bag, penny a loaf, to feed the family. They were ready to buy for penny a loaf. And when you're hungry, you're close. Mm-hmm. When your neighbor's in the same boat, you're in the same boat. You help each other. There's no such thing as greed, animosity.
Okay, well, those were all positive experiences.
Oh, definitely, yes. Beautiful days, beautiful years.
Okay, well, I can't thank you enough. This was really
well, great. I don't... I can't thank you enough for taking time and listen to my...
Okay, well, you did us a big favor, and we thank you very much, and...